6 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting to order.
Madam Chair, do we need to get you a gavel?
I don't know whether this thing is working. Okay, is there any public participation? Patsy?
Sure, that'd be great. That's terrific. Thank you. Yeah, just so I can read this. Thank you very much. Is it on?
Okay, thank you very much. For the record, I'm Patsy Petrie. I'm a county board member. And I just wanted to share very briefly this evening something from a book that I'm reading. It's called The Third Lie. And the third lie is the argument that's often placed forward that government can solve everything, and the more money we put in it, the better the solutions. And the author is Richard Gillis. He's dean of the School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. And the main focus of his 40 years of teaching and research is on children's welfare. So what I read to you will have reference to children, but I do think it's applicable to what this task force is wrestling with in relationship to community justice and a long list of programs that exist in our community and the questions whether those programs are as effective as they can be. It's not too long that I want to read to you. Let's see. Government also has money. Even without raising taxes, government has an opportunity to create and fund new programs. But that would require abandoning or severely reducing funding for programs and policies that fail to meaningfully help those at whom they are targeted. I can say that, you don't need that, but I must contend that some of the proposed budget cuts are in fact appropriate, given that we have so little evidence that the programs targeted for extinction are actually effective. For example, as we have seen, programs like Head Start or funding under the Individuals with Disability Education Act have been shown to have little long-term educational benefits. Despite their widespread popularity, the steady stream of money allocated year after year would better be deployed for the Children's Future Voucher account. Instead of dithering over the immorality of cutting social programs that feel good but have no major helping impact, I believe that the current economic crisis and political jockeying provide an ideal moment to implement a promising program that can invest in rather than mortgage children's futures. I believe that we must draw on our good sense as citizens and muster the will to give every American child the option to be able upon reaching childhood. And the point I want to underline is what he has spent time in this book writing about is that we don't take time to look and see if programs are actually effective. We just keep funding them. And this is one of the conversations you all have been having, and so this seemed to be an encouraging paragraph to share with you all. Thank you.
Any other public participation?
I want to say that I have to be here because Nami will kill me if I'm not here. But I'm not only interested in mental health, but I'm interested in many other aspects of this. And we have many people, the homeless, and we have a huge problem of locking up the poor who have no way they get fined and they have no way of paying off the fine. So they keep going back and it's a revolving door. So this is a very complicated problem. And I say it has a lot to do with socioeconomic status. It has a lot to do with race. And it also has a lot to do with mental illness. But I'm just saying that we need to take all these things into account, and I'm not here just to speak up for mental illness.
She does. And Darlene, you want to introduce our facilitator?
Sure. As we greeted our last meeting tonight, we would do a visioning session. And
Wait, just a second. I forgot the approval of the minutes. Anyone move to approve the minutes? All in favor say aye. Oh, it's good. Yes.
How's that? Is that working?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to request that the half-page memo that I passed out be included in the minutes. I believe you have a copy of it, so I'd appreciate if it were there. I read it out loud, so it seems appropriate to keep it there. I'd like it to be on record.
Do you have a copy of it?
I do, but I think that the recorder also has it.
I do not have it with me, but I do have a copy.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
I'd like to move to amend the minutes to include Julian's proposal.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
So we would like the minutes to have that added, and then they are approved.
I think technically we need to.
Now.
We just approved the amendment to the motion. I think we now need to vote on the motion.
Okay.
Sorry. It's just it.
Yeah. Okay. All in favor of approving the amended minutes?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Now, can you?
Okay. When this light is on, does that mean my microphone's on?
Yes.
Okay. As we spoke about at our last meeting, we talked about doing a visioning exercise for the beginning of this meeting to talk a little bit about the direction that we might ideally see moving. And I was able to arrange for a facilitator this evening. This is Carrie Spear. Carrie and I both sit on the executive committee of the Continuum of Care, which recently did this similar exercise regarding the continuum of services for homeless persons. And so, as I mentioned last time, I thought it appropriate that this might be a good exercise for us to do, and Carrie willingly came to do that tonight. So welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. So I promised I could do things with my left and right hand, so this will be interesting. Is that loud enough? Okay. I'm going to hand out two things. Number one, just some questions that we're going to use for tonight. And also I'm going to hand out the visioning workshop, kind of the results that came from the homeless meeting. Because first of all, you just mentioned the homeless. There's obviously a connection in some of these areas. But I thought it'd be nice for you to see kind of what we came up with as an executive committee after this process. And we had about, I think, 25 people participate in that visioning workshop. So if you could just take one and pass it down. Yes, of course, Melanie Jackson. The second one is kind of questions. I guess I should keep one for myself for tonight. Can I steal one of those, too? I'm sorry. There should be enough for everybody. Thank you. So we had a facilitator for the homeless, the planning director, actually, for the city of Champaign, who has an interest in homelessness, but by no means is an expert. So it was rather interesting, and that's kind of why I think Darlene asked me. I'm interested in this topic, but I'm not an expert, and so we'll be neutral here and just want to kind of help guide some of your conversations. I see that you guys have done a lot of work already, obviously. Some of that I've had a chance to review. I can help pass these around. Sorry, I'm just going to help pass them. So she's like, thank you. So if you want to just spend a few minutes, and then the one that's for tonight, if you want to jot some of your thoughts down, and maybe the first question, we're going to limit you to three sentences. So the first question on tonight's page, why are you participating on a task force? You get three sentences to explain why you're here. So maybe about 5 minutes. A very studious group. I think we'll wrap up. Or you're making your grocery list, one of the two, I can't tell. Okay. So some of you, well, a few of you I recognize, many of you I do not, so it'll be helpful for me. Again, I'm Carrie Spear. We'll start over here and go around. You've already introduced yourself. I didn't catch your name, I'm sorry.
I'm not on the task force. My name is Ann Russell.
Okay. 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 Thank you.
You want me to say my name?
Yeah. Can you go ahead and answer, I guess, question number one? As you go around and introduce yourself and why you're here. That would be helpful.
I'm Julian Rappaport. I'm here because I'm convinced that the county needs to think systematically about alternatives to buildings in order to assist people who are unnecessarily confined in jail. There are many examples of alternatives that work better to achieve a safer, more humane criminal justice system.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Lynn Branham, and I'm a visiting professor at St. Louis University Law School, Fresno Champaign. No, I'm on the task. I'm sorry?
Put your light on.
Oh, shoot.
Thank you.
It's too different. Recorded. Okay. Lynn Branham, I teach law, and the reason why I'm on the task force is I focus my research and reform works on correctional and sentencing law and policy, and I wanted to bring my expertise into my own community. I've always worked on the national level, and so I'm so enthused about working with all of these people and others to effect change in our own community.
Hi, I'm Scott Bennett. I'm an attorney and a prosecutor with the state's attorney's office. And basically when the task force was created, I thought that my role could be kind of bring a practical approach or practical perspective to kind of the aspirational ideals that we have, and also to address, you know, the problems that we have with jails getting more crowded while we have less funds to actually to even maintain what we have. Okay. So that was my interest in it.
That's very practical.
Hi, I'm Michael Richards, the previous chairman of this task force. I was deputy board chair for Justice and Social Services last term, and this term I'm the Democratic Caucus chairman. And I'm participating in this task force because Illinois' criminal justice system is broken, and that has some pretty negative consequences here in Champaign County. It makes it pretty difficult for our criminal justice system to work the way really anybody wants it to. And so I want to help, and I think we all want to look at ways that we can get over that hump and look at some programs that we can do that are shown to be better alternatives to just locking people up, because we certainly have a heavy bias towards just the buildings, because we don't get a lot of help from the state when it comes to programs that would save everybody money. But it would be money down the road as opposed to money right now. So that's why I'm on here.
Okay.
I'm Bruce Sardini, and I'm with Prairie Center Health System here. I wanted to be on a task force to have a voice for substance abuse and mental health issues that seem to plague our jail system, and to have a voice in how to divert jail inmates into community-based programs.
Well, hello. I'm Darlene Kleppel. I'm with the Regional Planning Commission. And my interest in being on the task force is that I have some previous expertise that I was hoping to be able to be of use to this committee with some knowledge and experience. But more personally, because I like to be involved with efforts that find solutions to things and that offer people the best opportunity to be productive citizens in whatever avenues they're pursuing. Okay.
I'm James Kilgore. I'm here representing Citizens with Conviction, and I'm on the task force because I'm committed to social justice and have experienced the injustice of the prison and jail system firsthand and want to see changes made on the basis of my experience and feel that this is a good place to be able to be effective.
Okay. Okay.
I'm William Sullivan, and I'm on task force because I believe we haven't done nearly enough to seek out and put into practice alternatives to incarceration, that it seems irresponsible, fiscally irresponsible, to indemnify two or three generations of citizens of this county by building an incredibly expensive facility that's initially expensive, but the everyday costs of developing that facility are going to be enormous. And I don't feel it's responsible for us to do that without exploring these alternatives with some vigor. And I want to be part of addressing the delinquency of not having addressed these alternatives in the past.
Okay. Hello?
I'm Astrid Berkson. I'm on the county board. I'm here to try and find what the possibilities are in the way of alternatives to influence this whole jail mess and see what we can do to influence the decisions that are going to be made.
Okay. Do you guys want to comment? Okay. Yes.
Thank you. I'm Jim McGuire. I'm a county board member also, and I'm here to watch also what you are doing, and I'm hopeful that we can help our fellow community members who need help maybe not get into a system and end up in the jail and alleviate some of the issues that we have with the jail that all of you are discussing, but look at the system overall to improve it and to help our fellow citizens that need assistance. So hopefully we can do that. Thank you.
Do you want to add anything? Okay. Okay. Well, there are some definite themes. I just started counting. I think four times we talked about alternatives to the building itself. Are there other methods that many of you are interested in seeking out? Would that be correct? Maybe more of you. You were limited to three sentences. I won't point out the politicians who did not speak to three sentences. It's okay. It's granted. Obviously, I think you mentioned, I'm terrible with names, Lynn, and those are tiny little name tags. I'll be running around the circle here. Affecting change locally, so you have a lot of national expertise, but you're excited about the opportunity to actually see something happen locally with what you can bring to the table, and that is interesting. The practical approach, the cost, how do you implement it? We can have great ideas, but how are we going to find a way to implement those locally, and what would they cost? A couple of times mentioned this, the current system appears to be broken and something has to change. I think even, William, you mentioned that part of your interest in being here is that it's been going on for a long time and you want to be a part of it today to make it work better. Substance abuse and mental health, and I've seen that in some of the materials, obviously, several times. Also, this one, I'll put a little star, it's in the same with the homeless. So we talk about the homeless visioning and, you know, how do people get into homelessness? How do people get into jail? Frequently, this is a reason. Seeking solutions and problem solving, I think that was Darlene. Just even if you don't have this as your specific area of expertise, if you're a problem solver, you can be a great contribution to a committee to help people put those ideas into action. Mr. Kilgore, you had experience with the system itself and felt like it was broken. And, again, alternatives to jail, which we started counting up here. So this is the number one theme. Does that surprise anybody as to why you're here? I looked at your minutes from the last month, which is interesting because some of you asked or commented about what your original charge was for being on the task force or what the original charge from the board was in a couple different places. And that was the original reason, right, the proposal for the jail. And do you want to build new? Do you want to rehab? Or do you want to add programming, correct? Okay. And you guys have put together some proposals. 11, if I have this right, 11 recommendations to be included in your final report. Does that sound about right? Okay. Let's go to question number two. This is the fun one, I think. And I am really getting... Darlene promised audio, but no video. Okay. So what would the ideal justice system, what would it look like or what would it include in 10 years? We're going to do 10 years and 20 years. And if you want to change that, if 5 years sounds better, I'm open to that. But it's good to think about what are some things that you can do, kind of short or medium term goals, and then some things are going to take a while to build, rehab, or even create new. Maybe it's not a facility, but maybe it is a new program. Repeatedly in your minutes, you talk about getting people to think of things differently, and you know that takes time too. So we don't have to go in any particular order. But who wants to start? What would the ideal justice system look like?
I think one a short-term goal could just be less recidivism, in that people who would serve their sentence or would get involved the first time would be less likely to reoffend in the coming years.
I'm not being graded on my spelling either. Yes.
I'd like to suggest that two things. Mm-hmm. One is there wouldn't be a single mentally ill individual incarcerated for activities associated with mental illness. In other words, we'd treat mental illness as a non-criminal activity. The second thing is that we would be fully vested and well-practiced at restorative justice techniques, and we would incorporate restorative justice practices to the fullest extent possible within our criminal justice system.
Okay. I'll let you guys duke it out. Oh, and you had your hand up too.
To follow up on Scott, I had a more specific thing. Target was to reduce flow to DOC by 80%, which would take us back to the incarceration rates of 1980.
Reduce
flow, to DOC by 80%, which would take us back to the incarceration rates of 1980. Incarceration rate. Per capita.
Here, or are you looking at national?
Well, in Champaign County, it's almost paired nationally. But anyway, so.
Okay.
So if we reduce that, yeah.
To make sure I captured it right,
yeah.
Reduce the flow to the Illinois Department of Corrections.
By 80%.
By
80%. That's how much we would need to reduce it to return to the levels of incarceration.
Of 1980.
I second the points on restorative justice. And the other thing I would have is that there would be no racial disparities in the jail population.
Okay.
We should have a detox center. We should end the war on drugs. we should find some way of dealing with people, working people who are too poor to comply with the law, and then they're too poor, obviously, to pay the fines that they're being fined for breaking the law. A living wage might help. But there ought to be some way to dealing with people who can't pay for car insurance and can't pay the fines, besides putting them in jail. I mean, I think that's just downright peculiar. That isn't a crime. Whatever it is, it can't possibly be a crime. And the other thing I'd like to see is a uniform way of dealing with all the floaters, all the people who are floating around loose in society. People who come out of jail, people who have been unemployed for 5 years, homeless people. You know, there's all sorts of ways that people just fall into the reject pile, and there should be free minimal housing for them and services to get them back into society. I don't think that you need different programs for people coming out of jail from people who are just going down the drain. I think they all need to somehow be reintegrated into society.
So if I can summarize what you've said, a detox center, in the war on drugs, poverty, I put poverty-related charges at the bottom there, and I put number two because it reminded me of the, who had the mental health comment, the second bullet, that to not incarcerate for mental health issues for non-criminal charges, correct? So would you say that's kind of what you're looking for?
No, I'm looking at people who work at, I don't want to say the name of any particular business, but they work at a business where they don't pay a minimum wage, so then they can't insure their car, so then they lose their license. They can't afford the insurance. They certainly can't afford the fines, and eventually they end up in jail just for trying to work. And without any mental health problems at all.
Right. I'm not suggesting that they have mental health. I'm saying similar to number two where he talked about mental health.
Yes.
You're recommending that we don't jail people just because they're poor.
Yes.
So no poverty-related incarceration.
Yes.
If it's a non-criminal offense. Okay. Isn't that totally clear? It's my three little... No, I'm kidding. Hopefully this will record well, right? We'll remember what I was writing. And then lastly, you said a uniform way to deal with floaters, which is the housing issues, the living wage, and those aren't necessarily different than the jail population, but it's kind of that safety net for the entire county.
Yes.
Which is similar to what you see on the homeless sheet, our continuum of services. Yes.
I was looking at an integrated system of care of providers, mm-hmm, that collaborate on the expenditures of dollars and uses evidence-based data to support ongoing expenditures or cutting the least effective.
Okay. How can we summarize that to my nice little bullet sheet here? You're basically wanting the providers to, if I jump to your recommendations, did that kind of fall under number 10 or number 9? No.
You're talking about a system of care,
yeah,
rather than a scattered care. So,
which the continuum of care.
So it's an integrated system of care that uses data that drives expenditures or cuts ineffective programs. And I want to ditto what Astrid said about detox.
Okay. And this body of the system of care that will use the data to make their future decisions, whether they add or cut, is made up of the service providers themselves,
mm-hmm,
correct? Okay. While I'm down here, does anybody else want to vote for detox? My knees are old. Okay.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay.
So I want to check every single item,
yes,
stated so far. So if you're counting, mm-hmm, right, I'm agreeing with everything that's been said, but I want to add something as well.
Yes. Okay.
So
do you want to put a check on? Yep.
All of them.
Okay.
But if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, kind of. What would you like to add?
So I want to add a couple of things. One is perhaps was implied in what you were just saying, but I think I'd like to add an evaluation system so that it's routine, that all programs and all services have built-in evaluation, which I do not agree that it should be. Maybe this is, depending on what you meant by service providers there, I do not agree that they should be the people to determine this. I think they should have input on it. They should be part of a team. We ought to have the people who are the targets of the services, the expected beneficiaries be included. I think we ought to have a system in which there are people who are outside the system itself who ought to look at it. So if we're talking about ideals, you would build in an ideal program evaluation system that included multiple voices from multiple people in the community.
I could add to that. Under the homeless model, there is an executive committee, which is primarily made up of agencies that are direct service providers, do receive direct funding. But the monitoring piece that you're talking about happens by non-funded agencies so that you don't have that. Because it is difficult to obviously evaluate a program when you have something at stake.
Well, yeah, at this point all I would say is the actual mechanics of all of this have to be worked out, the day-to-day, how do you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be important to include the principle of independent evaluation of the things that are happening as a part of that expected way the system works. So if I could refer to Patsy Petrie's opening comment here.
Mm-hmm.
It so happens that I don't agree with the particular example that was used. I think there's lots of evidence to contradict that example. But the principle is important.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay. Darlene?
I'd like to add something at the front end. So we're talking about the end being evaluation. The front end, I think some of the other points might have talked about this sort of indirectly, and that is that there should be a consistent coordinated intake point where triage occurs. So there's some screening or assessments or different things that occur that determines whether someone has a mental illness and the jail is not the appropriate intervention, or that somebody should be in the jail because they're a safety risk, or that something should happen at that point. And I don't think that's very coordinated at the present time.
Okay.
But in the ideal situation, it would be coordinated.
Yeah. So two over here, we have the mental health, 2, 5, maybe even 7 poverty-related, that somewhere there's an initial intake that determines, right, you know what, you're really better suited here, not.
Right. Okay. And that the second point I'd like to make about that is that I think that all of these steps should happen, as we say in our Constitution, in a speedy fashion.
Speedy. I'm guessing, and you could probably help with this, that would be required. I mean, if anything's built in on the front end of the system, it still has to meet the Constitution. I mean, you can't slow down the process for people because locally we've decided we want to do X.
There is a requirement, and I'm sure you know that, within 120 days, the case has to reach resolution, has to be a trial. The exception to that, though, might be, and this happens from time to time, where the defendant can move to continue if they're trying to get into a program. So as is often, you can say, we're trying to get into drug court or we're trying to get into mental health court, and so they'd rather have that than Department of Corrections, so they will move to continue the case. And then because of space issues and other things, and it might take several months for them to actually get a spot in. So in that case, you're right, that is a delay in which they're spending extra time in custody.
Is that what you're worried about, that if the programs on the back end are causing the delay, or just that you want to make sure that these steps
I'm just thinking that you know, the triage should occur quickly so they don't have to stay in jail for a week to get assessed. There should be
the assessment should take place, the intervention should be able to start. There, that would, of course, assume that there's slots available for people in various programs.
Okay.
That, you know, if it's a trial, that that happens as quickly as it can, that people, you know, it just moves along.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I kept expecting Lynn to say what we need is a full array of best practice pretrial services. That would be quite specific now to the system we're talking about. But those words mean something in this system. And it's related to what you're speaking of. It's not identical, but it's related to it.
Is that an array of things that might be made available, pretrial services?
I bet you could say a lot about it.
It's basically a program.
It's one.
To deal with, to keep people, they haven't been convicted yet,
mm-hmm.
and instead of being in jail while awaiting trial, they're out in the community. There may be some supervision and the like, but they're screening to make sure that only people that have to
be in jail are in jail.
Okay.
So I had several. Did we got everybody?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, first of all, as priority, the 11 that we've mentioned, and some of them have been repeated here, but the 11 potential recommendations would certainly be priorities. And then kind of a major overarching point is I think we need to start making we call them hard choices, but establish priorities in a number of ways. First of all, systemically, we should make as a priority throughout the criminal justice system, including law enforcement, focusing on crimes that pose significant risks to public safety. We really need to concentrate our resources there. So that's one thing that goes beyond our identified priorities. Two, I think we need to streamline the criminal justice system. This is a related point. But think about if certain conduct is so problematic that we need a government response, will civil penalties suffice, or can we handle this through the public health system? Another priority is to limit convictions wherever possible, because convictions are often a life sentence. I just got a call last week from somebody who just, you know, went through, you know, got through Cornell and all these things, and all these employment doors are being closed because of a prior conviction. And there's ways to do that. The Netherlands model for all crimes punishable by up to 6 years, they're conditionally dismissed upon payment of a fine. And as long as the defendant doesn't commit a new crime within 3 years, it's gone. If the defendant does commit a new crime, those original charges can be reinstated. But that way, people can put the past behind them. I think that should be a priority for Champaign County.
So you're saying in that example, it's a six, if your crime would net
That's
you
just
as
an example. We could figure out the details. But the bottom line is to try to limit convictions so people can put the past. No, there's a different fine system that we can talk about. It's called the day fine system, and I can talk about that so that we don't have the problem you talked about. It's calibrated to their ability to pay.
So in that example, instead of having a prison sentence, they have a probation period, if you will.
In the Netherlands, the presumptive penalty is a fine. If the judge doesn't impose a fine, she has to explain why. But again, the fine is adjusted to somebody's ability to pay.
I think we're getting into a specific like programs or something. I'm wondering if what's the principle behind what you're saying? Is that you want it to be the punishment related to the crime.
That was great. You're right. That's an example. Is I'm trying to limit convictions as much as possible, and also limit incarceration.
Both. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Were you finished? Okay.
To add to Julian's comments over on this sheet now about evaluation.
Okay.
I'd like it added that it be both formative and summative evaluation. Is that okay?
Sure, that's great. That's a little technical, but but that's your expertise.
I as said, both formative and summative evaluation be added to Julian's comment about doing evaluation, because too often they wait till the end of a formative evaluation is somewhere midway in a program. You step back and see if it's actually working, rather than waiting to the very end, which is summative, and saying, oh, my goodness, we shouldn't have been spending this money to this extent. Or Julian will fill in.
Well, just if we were going to, I didn't think we were going to talk at that level of detail about any of this just yet. If you're going to talk about it, the kind of evaluation you need in a system like this, a real ongoing system, this is not some experimental program or some, you need something that has, one of the presumptions is the evaluation is for the purposes of feedback. It's not for the purposes of simply saying, oh, that works, oh, that doesn't work. It's for the purposes of finding out what's working, what's not working, and making modifications. And I guess that would be the formative idea. And so that's implicit, but for people who do evaluation of things like this, but that would be the way you'd want to think about it.
Anybody else want to add to this? Okay, I'm going to move on to, first of all, how do you feel? I know you don't usually come to public meetings and people say, how do you feel? But does this, just be honest, please.
That's the first time this question has been asked in this room, I bet.
Please share your feelings. Is this helpful so far? Or... Okay, I don't want to waste your time. I think I can go off my own agenda a little. The next thing we were going to talk about, number three, I'm not going to jump at 2023 to 2033. I think you guys have done a good job here. But what programs or procedures in the current system seem to be working well? I'm going to skip that for a moment, because in looking at your 11, which you mentioned here, it does feel like a lot of these things fall into those categories. Yes? Oh, okay. Do you have your 11 with you handy? That was part of the quiz today. I'm just going to read them. I highlighted like the key word or set of words in each. And then I came up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 categories, and they all kind of fit into those five, and I think we're still, and I wonder if that would be a useful exercise. You do still have a lot of work in front of you, I realize that, but to kind of lump these things together, and from your minutes, it looked like you were trying to break up into groups to carry out some of that work, right? And I don't think from reading the minutes that you necessarily had assigned all the priority areas. Is that correct? Okay. So starting with number, I'm looking at page 7 here, potential recommendation number 1, incarceration is the last option. That certainly keeps popping up, right? I'm just going to write, actually, bear with me. These are my thoughts, which aren't really supposed to be here. Policies, procedures. Here's what I was thinking, and some of it's going to change since your discussion. But number 1, priority number 1, number 5,
number 6, number 7, and I'm going to add number 9 and 11. I had that 9-11 under ongoing or funding, but after hearing your conversation about evaluating and what kind of system would you use, the integrated system of care that uses data to drive decisions using service providers, but then also that independent evaluation. So these are your priorities, okay? And so in a different color, number 9 and 10, off of that sheet. Number 1, how do you reduce recidivism? Your policies, procedures, pretrial services. What else would fit under here? Go ahead.
Substance abuse and mental health. I think that's a big one that causes people to keep reoffending. They haven't addressed underlying issues that caused the behavior in the first place.
Okay, so would that be... I had mental health and substance abuse all on its own, but I can be swayed. Do you want to put it here that you need to... Are you thinking that the county board needs to create something that would address number 2? And then later, number 5, correct, right? You need to create a program?
I'm sorry, yeah. Yes, in a lot of ways, or expand the programs that we have or fund the programs that we say we have to actually be able to reach those people that need those.
Okay, so that would be... Well, that is true. What number 2 said was no mental health incarcerations for non-criminal offenses, right? That's definitely a system change. So up here, it's number 4. So we're going to add number 4, right, under your potential recommendations?
Yes.
To this, but it seems to me that recommendation number 1 is much more of a philosophical recommendation than a policies and procedures recommendation. And I think there's a philosophical thread that runs through those as well. So I don't know if you're planning to bring that in or if that's a...
You're saying number 1 on your...
Number 1 on the task force recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think that's... I think it's far more philosophical than policies and procedures. And I mean...
It is an outcome, right?
I think there's a lot of philosophical philosophy going through the recommendations that are here as well. I
mean, okay.
Notions of restorative justice, do no harm, those kinds of things. I think... Those are not policies as such. They're ideas that inform policy.
Okay.
I'm thinking kind of the same. What I'm thinking is that what we've come up with is the guiding principles, sort of. It's not a program or a policy. It's a, if we heard a policy, we could evaluate it against these things.
Okay. How does that affect the work of this group? Have you guys created your guiding principles?
Not exactly.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
All right. Yay, we're succeeding. Okay, so you have the recommendations. Now you can kind of shift them. These things can help us guide our future decisions. This is the direction we want to move in versus these are things that are that we can create. Implement, measure, right? Those are the two camps that we kind of need to focus on. Okay, so number 1 moves off of here. What else? Number 1 over here too, right? So red is your work over here tonight, and black is what you've already done. That helps.
I got lost.
Who's in track of the numbers?
Yeah. What? I'm sorry. The I'm sniffing a lot of marker over here. The red is your work down here tonight.
What red?
The red up here. So we're kind of dividing things into two camps. These are your guiding principles, philosophy, why you're doing what you're doing or how you'll make decisions going forward or how the county board would make decisions. These are things that you would recommend they create or implement or fund. Does that feel right? Okay.
Well, I'm
like,
still lost. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was thinking of all these things here as guiding principles.
Well, when we got towards the end, some of them were more program related or.
Like the detox center.
Detox
program.
Center.
That's
a hard.
Not a guiding principle. That's saying we want this program specifically.
Okay, maybe. But it's a part of the philosophy here. These are all things.
Well, anything can be a philosophy.
I don't see them as specific enough to be programs, is what I'm saying.
It's a starting point. We're not. I have 45 minutes. We weren't going to nail all the jello to the wall tonight. We were just going to put it onto the east or the west wall, if you will. Does
no,
that mean?
I'm struggling here
okay.
because I don't believe that we are going to be able to specify at the level of actual program detail how you would carry these things out.
But
in,
might
in
you
amount
have
of time that we have?
Well, I
don't think so, actually, but we can discuss what we should do if we'd like to, but I don't believe that's a feasible task.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Carrie, but I think what we're trying to do is separate these things that we have here and these 11 that we have here already in writing into two camps, what Carrie's calling the East Wall and the West Wall. One would be guiding principles such as we think there should be less recidivism, or we think there should be a uniform way to check or evaluate something or whatever. Those are, but there, it doesn't say anything about how you do that or what that would be. But some of them say, like, for example, that we should have a detox center. We don't know the details of that, but that is a specific component that we want to see. Or have a
triage.
11.
That's
a very concrete thing. Yeah, so those might be more like if we were going to design a system, these are the components that it would have. The other things are saying the reason we would have triage is because it will help us to divert mentally, which is number two, divert mentally ill people, potentially deal with racial disparity. That's why we would have a triage, or the triage should address it in that way, or do those things. That's all I'm.
There's just a number of things there that are not like that.
No, there are, that's right.
Like no racial disparity in the jail population.
Right.
I don't think that's a specific program, is it?
Right. So what I'm saying is that would be more a policy or a guiding principle.
That you could measure.
If we were going to propose a detox center, would that actually help us do that? If we were going to propose a substance abuse program, would it actually help us do that? That's all I'm just – it's maybe just language. I don't know.
Good point. Okay. I give up.
Yes.
We have now, a couple of months, 2.5 months, to influence the needs assessment people, and then 2 months after that to influence the board as to what they're going to do. Decisions are going to be made, and it's going to be buildings or programs, and we have to have viable, practical things to put before them. The principals are not going to change their minds about how they spend the money.
Or
I think we have to have something where they know what it is, what it would do, and how much it would cost. I think we do have to be pretty practical here.
Yes.
I think why we're here is because we are a new body. Some of us have been through a process and some of us haven't. So I think we're kind of trying to go back and trace our process so we can move ahead with some kind of collective foundation. So I think, if I can try to track some of our process, I think the first process is that people went through is kind of a shift. I mean, when we had this proposal to build a jail, there was kind of a reaction against that, and we need to look at another way of administering justice. So we started to think in a different way and look at restorative justice and look at alternatives to incarceration and so forth. So that is kind of a philosophical change that we went through. And then once we kind of made that shift, we started looking for ways in which to make that philosophical change a reality. Who's in the jail? And how can we reduce the numbers of people in the jail by implementing programs in the communities? So we look at the areas where there's substance abuse, there's mental health, and there's homelessness. Those are some of the areas that we kind of looked at, and that's what comes out in the task force recommendations. Now here we have to take that to another level. We have to go from mental health to what do we propose concretely? What kind of program? How many people? How much is it going to cost? How many jail beds is it going to save, and so forth? So to me, these two things, because people answered it differently, these charts here reflect both the specific details, a detox center, and also the kind of areas that we need to act in, because people just have different ideas when they looked at 2023. We're kind of at the level of identifying those areas from what was in the task force, and then we have to go to the, as Astrid is saying, the nuts and bolts of this task force is to nail down some proposals that we can put on the table. Yeah. I don't know if that helps to get through some of the process stuff. It's complicated. But
the one thing I wanted to add, because, again, we really have to have a practical orientation, give specifics that the board wants, and we know that number crunching that's going to be needed. Having said that, in my own personal memo to the task force, I had outlined what I believed were core principles of restorative criminal justice, and I felt that that was important to integrate into our proposals, because at the end of the day, we want some common values to pull us all together. To the extent, you know, we do in many ways, there's adversarial system, but we can all agree that individuals should have an obligation to remedy to the extent possible the harm their crimes have caused, or that's what we, and that commitment to protecting legal rights should be a characteristic here. And another example, least restrictive sentences necessary, allocation of adequate resources, transparency and accountability. And there were 12 that I had set forth. We didn't have a chance to even talk about them. So I don't know if the group would agree, but all I'm saying is that I had tendered that. But then you take those, and the thought was then in our recommendation regarding a coordinating council, that council's work would be predicated on these basic precepts, that we don't impose a more costly sentence and a more ineffective one when there's a better one out there. So just to let you know, there has been some work on principles, and then some of our own potential recommendations, I think, reflect some principles.
So that's, you've written this, but the group has not discussed it.
We have not had a chance. Two reasons. One, we're really under the gun just to get work done for the progress report. And two, now we have some new members who may not even be aware of that. So we just haven't gotten to that point.
Okay. That sounds like an important point, though. If those could be your guiding principles on how you make decisions, so everybody has that? Has everyone reviewed it?
No.
No. Okay.
Everyone was supposed to get this. And these are 29.
But we didn't have, we never had a collective discussion.
I've gotten it and read it, but we haven't talked about it.
Yeah, no. True.
Okay. How frequently does this group meet? What are you doing tomorrow? No, I'm just kidding. Once a month.
It's getting to be twice a month, probably.
Yeah, but I mean.
So twice, was once a month, now twice a month.
I'll keep this one short, but I think a problem that we have is we have those philosophical principles which Lynn has given us, which we haven't really properly discussed. And I think we're now torn between, do we really want to have a long philosophical discussion now, given the need to put out these concrete proposals? But on the other hand, can we get the concrete proposals done if we don't have our guiding sort of philosophy together? So I it's kind of a difficult
Is it something that you put forth? You don't have to have all the work done. You're trying to help the county board make a decision, correct? And so if they like the direction of what you're suggesting, that this gets discussed further later, meaning maybe these guiding principles, core principles, I'm sorry, get weighted later? Is that possible? that if you as a group agree that in general you agree with these concepts, but they need to be fleshed out a little bit more. Go ahead.
I would posit that just having the brief conversation tonight helped me as a new person to be able to better look at, even if we started now and didn't have a long discussion about other principles that we might agree on or values, at least if we have a proposal of five recommendations in front of me, I can think about them in terms of, well, is this idea going to reduce recidivism? Is this idea going to better triage people? Is this idea better going to lengthen or speed up or whatever the process is that people have to go through? So that by just having this one-hour conversation, it's helped me just in that way.
And kind of coming back to why you're all here. I mean, there was the charge that you were given by the county board, but then you all came with your own personal reasons to be here. And it's important to remember why everyone else is on the committee and then how can you take that information and make a collective decision. What do you guys think as far as it's pages 28 and 29? Is that correct? Do you want to put that on something to be discussed prior to your recommendation, but you agree to review it maybe as a group? And I do think it makes sense as you go through here because many of these are philosophies or broad items, but some of them are very concrete. And so how will you judge those? And one of the concerns I think you mentioned, Julian, was not having enough time to actually come up with some programs before the recommendation needs to go forward. And I think there's a lot of experts here who have some best practices. If you look at the questions I wrote down, what goes well currently in Champaign? I mean, there's things that you're doing well in Champaign County. What are those things? And you guys, maybe you take this after tonight individually, but come back at the next meeting. What goes well? What currently exists? That was 5A. 5B, what does not exist here, but you know it exists elsewhere? And the first thing that popped into my head is you don't have to build a new jail sometimes. You can outsource, right? You can. It's not ideal. I'm just saying that's a quirky alternative, right? You don't necessarily need more jail service or jail space here when you have peak populations at certain times. Unofficial comes to mind, right, coming up with the U of I campus. There's other alternatives. So what are those? You know, is it in your recommendations? I saw the pod idea where you put a pod building up, you send people to Piatt County, whatever. So what are those things that you don't have here, but you could actually outsource or easily implement? C, what exists as a best practice elsewhere that one of you is familiar with? I'm sure many of you have. You've made some of those ideas, said some of those tonight, and that you would like to recommend. So you as an individual task force member, what would you recommend as a best practice that you know of elsewhere? And then D, what needs to be created new because it's not here? It's not a best practice that you've heard of, but in your work on this task force over the past year, you've surely thought of some creative ideas that you would like to see implemented and maybe be on that new best practice, right? We'd be the model here in Champaign County. What would we do to be the model for others? Go ahead.
So, well, I don't know if what I'm going to say is anybody thinks but me, so I'll say it. But even though I've been talking to these folks for a long time, or most of them, it seems to me that what we want is actually something that's more than a list of, here are four programs that we think the county board should adopt, which I doubt that they will anyway, because you can't just propose something and then suddenly have it dropped into be the responsibility of a set of people who are running an ongoing system because you happen to like it. It's something that has to be developed in conjunction with the people who are responsible for running the system. So these could be excellent examples of things to illustrate the point. The point being, it seems to me, that what we really want is the people who are the criminal justice officials in this community, what we want the county board to say, who's responsible for that system, that we want you to adopt a system that has these goals and intentions. And there's a lot of examples about how you could do it, but get to work and do it. Work with local people, work with community people, work with experts. That has to be communicated to the people who are responsible for running the system. In the absence of that, there are many, many examples of programs that exist. But that won't get us anywhere in absence of what I am now speaking of.
Yes.
It isn't that simple. We give a budget to other elected officials, and that's where our authority ends. We cannot tell the sheriff how to spend the money. So if you want, or the state's attorney, so if you want them to establish pretrial services, you show how good they are, how they will save us money, or whatever, you sell it to them. Because we can't force them to do anything once they've got the money.
Well, I have an opinion about that, but I don't want to debate that at the moment.
Yes.
I think, I mean, to support what Julian's saying, I mean, this is a political process. There's no magic bullet. Putting a proposal together is not a magic bullet. We can't, I mean, it's not going to end there, but it's a step that we have to take, but then we have to find ways to, as you're saying, make political pressure so that people are forced to consider the ideas that it's time for a change. If we look back in this county about 9 years ago, they made big changes in terms of policy to reduce the jail population because they felt there was political pressure because of overcrowding in the jail. I think we should be arguing that we're at a similar point now. We're at a turning point in the county's criminal justice system, and the pressure that was felt by the overcrowding, which led to the measures that reduced the jail population, should be being felt again because if they take the course of building more jail cells, they're going to go be taking us back another 20 years.
Just a mild change in terminology. Get more with sugar than vinegar. I would say we want to sell our recommendations and our programs, not force people to have them.
And I would add in my other job that I worked on a plan. And many people came to us and said, you have no funding, or what's funding it? Well, we didn't have any funding, but we said, if we don't have the plan, we'll never get the funding. And I'm here to tell you that that project now has $7.5 million in funding. You have to start with a plan. And as painful as this process is, and you guys, I mean, I'm here one night. I know you. I've read about you in the paper. You've had lots of meetings. Bless all of you for doing this work, which I'm sure feels thankless sometimes. But without this, the county board isn't going to change anything. But you have four here tonight. That's amazing. Yes.
My sense is that one of the ways to sell this is to do a very careful assessment of the not only initial cost, because almost all of the discussion that we've had, and certainly all the discussion I've seen in the media, has been about the one-time initial cost of building this structure. And I'm on the sustainability committee on campus, and we've talked a lot about making 1 or 2 or 3% greater initial investments in buildings in order to reduce the lifetime cost of a building on campus. We do assessments of buildings. We design buildings on campus to last 100 years. And what we've discovered in our work, and this is substantiated by a considerable amount of research, is that the initial cost that you spend on a building is about 15 to 18% of the lifetime cost of running that structure if it's 100 years old. I would bet, and I think probably what I'd like to do is get one of my buddies in economics to sit down and figure this out with me. I would bet that it's substantially greater when you're spending how many thousands of dollars per year per individual who's occupying the building. In addition, so you've got the building cost, the maintenance cost, the management cost of the building, and then in addition, how many thousands of dollars does it take to incarcerate somebody at the jail over here? $60 a day.
Bill, I used to do those kind of statistics, and I mean, it's been several years since I've done that, but the cost of building a jail facility is usually built for more like 30 to 40 years.
Okay, so we could do this assessment over 40 years.
But they're also doing 24/7 round-the-clock operations. Right. And so it so actually works out. It actually just works out to about the same. The cost of actually building the building, we calculated at that time, was about 8%.
About 8%.
Yeah, of the long-term cost of operating the building.
So if we're talking about, you know, so we're talking about $20 million of investment, but that's going to indemnify us and two generations of citizens of this community to be spending many tens of millions of dollars beyond that $20 million investment. And if you think of the cost of that investment versus putting money into these kinds of programs that stimulate jobs, that keep people out of prison, that reduce crime, it's almost a no-brainer. I mean, how could anybody who calls themselves a conservative not be first in line to support that kind of investment in their community? How could anyone that truly believes themselves to be a Republican not be the first person to say, I'm in favor of this? I think we need to do these. I think we need to put these dollars on the table. And I think we need to have, I think the when we sweeten the pot through this argument, I think some of us need to stand up, or a couple of us need to stand up, and speak only to very conservative ideas about fiscal responsibility. Because the kinds of things that investments we're talking about here are profoundly conservative. They invest and save money in the long run. And we shouldn't miss the opportunity to sell that mm-hmm. argument.
That's what you were...
Right, those are Lynn's 8 and 9, right.
Sorry, say that again.
20 million is 8% of 250 million.
Okay. This is what you were referring to, I think, at the very beginning. I wrote down the long-term cost plus the everyday cost if we're looking at building facilities.
Right.
I would add to that some of what you guys have talked about, for instance, detox center, triage, coordinated intake, that might involve a new building, yes? I mean, we don't really know. Right?
Right.
So as you're thinking about the jail, whether you build, remodel, okay, there's those costs that you're – so you're talking about the building costs, the fact that a jail is 24/7, it's not a school day. So there's those differences. But even if you don't increase the jail population, how would you implement some of these other things? So then I hope you have some good economic friends, because that's – right, you're looking at 24/7 buildings versus – would all of these facilities be 24/7? Those are the things you'd have to think about when you put your proposal together. Yes.
Well, there's another thing to think about if you're talking this way, which I think we should talk this way. I mean, I think Bill's general point is quite well taken. I'll give you an example of this, that I mean, and what this has to do, partly I'm wanting to comment about Astrid's thought that, you know, my intention is, I have no intention, if I can't tell anybody what to do. That's not really what I'm intending. We're talking a little bit here about strategies and tactics for getting people to make some changes. And so when we're talking about it economically, the other thing to think about is, I don't think we always have to frame it as, well, there's X amount of we're starting with no money. We're actually starting with a lot of money. The current criminal justice system, not just to maintain the building, but what we do right now costs a fair amount of money. And I haven't, maybe there are, but I don't believe there are very sophisticated, critical analyses of the programs and practices that are currently underway. So it's not just the quarter cent possibilities for increasing spending. We could reallocate. We could talk about reallocating the spending within the criminal justice system as it's currently constituted if we could convince people that there's a more efficient way to spend the very money they're already spending. And that requires calling people. That requires, I mean, saying things that maybe people don't want to hear, like, questions about, well, how effective is our current probation services, for example? Yeah. I don't know the answer to it, but I don't know anybody who's seriously asking it.
But it would also require data we don't have, right?
So this system should be collecting that kind of data is one of our principles to address the efficient use of the dollars that are already allocated to it, let alone the possibilities of new money.
If I could interject, I agree with you. You can look at any problem or issue and start from scratch. But we're not starting from scratch here. So we're trying to find the perfect balance of there was a specific question put in front of this group when you were created, correct? Okay. So we're starting from there. And from that discussion, more things have been added, which are very relevant and important, but you don't necessarily have all the data to analyze them at this point. You don't have access to the full budget. You're really a recommending body. So how do you put forth your effort to say, I don't want to say the final outcome, but let's say the recommendation is we don't want to build another jail, but instead we'd like to see funding go towards X, Y, and Z, right? That's a real possibility from this task force, if I'm reading it correctly. Okay, so you recommend X, Y, and Z. Maybe only X gets seriously considered, but isn't that a huge step forward compared to where we were a year and a half ago when they wrote the report originally? The conditions are deplorable and we need to, so just, you gotta take baby steps.
And I think the task force, you know, the draft report is a step in that direction because we have targeted the areas where we think we can put forward the proposals that you're talking about. And now in this stage of our existence, we're going to, you know, put some flesh on those proposals. Now, I mean, I think the kind of things that Julian's talking about, you know, restructuring and looking at the budget and misspending and so forth, I mean, maybe that's, you know, iteration number two of the task force can do, mm-hmm. can tackle that. But I think we have to build on what we've done so far, which is to isolate some areas, come up with a general direction, and now we have to try to come up with some more specific proposals and then find ways to promote them and convince the board, sell them charmingly to the board.
Right.
Or maybe not so charmingly sometimes.
Right. Yes.
I wanted to kind of blend several things I've heard with some information I gained this week that I think is very relevant to this task force and the decisions that have been raised in our discussion. But first, Bill, I really want to, we have recognized that what this task force lacks is the data, and we're waiting for ILPP. And I suddenly realized, and I'm going to talk to you about a discussion I had with somebody from ILPP this week, but I really like the idea, if you can discuss with that economist, at a minimum, that right now we can get data about the financial implications of if there is discussion of spending X amount, whatever that amount is, if it's $25, $30 million, getting a better sense of what that real figure is. That's something we can put out there now, and I think are put into our report, and that's something we don't have to be dependent on ILPP for. Secondly, in terms of what we can do now to both give specifics that the board wants and needs, but also provide some basic principles that I mentioned I think can unite us as a community and as a county, I think we can do several things. First, I have mentioned some principles. You may not agree with any of them, but at a minimum, if you could take a look at them, see which ones you think make sense, which additional ones you'd add. I don't think we should spend a lot of time on that. In other words, I think a lot of that can be done by email because I really think in these meetings we want to do concrete stuff. As far as the areas we've talked about kind of dividing up into and developing more specifics, Scott and I met this week, and it's interesting because the framework you mentioned here, I think we're headed in that direction. We'll talk about, like in pretrial services, the good things that county is doing, kind of the gaps that are there. None of this will be critical. It'll be talking about pretrial services, how it's done elsewhere, how it's cost effective. We'll pull in those specifics. And then the piece that we want to add is if we institute this, this is how much it will cost, and this is the actual impact on the jail. So which gets me to my discussion this week with someone from ILPP. I did not reach out to ILPP. Dr. Kalmanoff asked me to talk to Tom Eberle, who runs a pretrial services program, and I think it's South Carolina. But in any event,
He talked to me, and he's going to in turn talk to Scott, and I was thrilled to see he's worked with Barry Mahoney, who is the foremost expert in the country on pretrial services. There's nobody better. I told him about what I believe we need. We need the data. And I said, we need it fast. And he goes, what's the hurry? And that did give me pause. I was trying to think, well, what is the hurry? I did tell him about the sordid conditions in the downtown jail. But just his question made me realize that, you know, I'm actually one of those that likes to solve problems quickly, but not rashly. So he was intrigued that there was a sense that we had to make all these decisions in 2 months. But real good, solid contact. So I think we started to lay a foundation for at least being able to deliver some feedback to the group, and then we're hoping that there'll be progress, or at least I am, in the other areas that we kind of divvied up. Oh, that's right.
Only two people may discuss things between meetings, and they may not discuss it with any third person. Okay, because Open Meetings Act says no more than two people can discuss things except in an open meeting. And the same thing happens with discussing it over email. And
on the principles, could we do this? Could I then ask people to look? Contact me individually to see what revisions you want. No, can't do any of that. Okay. No. I was going to compile the feedback then.
We're 10 on the task force now. Is that correct? We're 10. Yes. Well, we were 9, but Mike Richards is here. That makes 10. So the public meetings rule is a third, if I'm not mistaken. So is it?
So I thought there was some question about whether or not we were in fact were subject to the Open Meetings Act because of the nature of our task force. Was that ever resolved?
The Open Meetings Act rule is a majority of a quorum, so that would remain too, like Astrid said. However, well, the only way it could be resolved would be a court case, but the state's attorney has advised us that they do not feel we qualify for being a public body because at the time I, and now Astrid, are the only public officials on here. And so the Open Meetings Act does not necessarily apply.
She stated that to us in this room.
She did.
She made that statement in this room on the record.
I was told that we were subject to the meeting.
But did she tell you that?
I just attended the county board meeting and the lessons in Springfield, and they indicated that any committee of the county board is subject to the Open Meetings Act. So this would be one.
Well, but this is not a committee of the county board. Members were not approved by the county board. They were appointed.
Yes, they
were.
Were
appointed by
they
me,
were.
And then they
we
were
voted on them in a meeting.
They were appointed by Astrid. Yeah. So. But it could be challenged in court. An opinion is an opinion. So the state's attorney opinion does not have the force of law, but we have been advised that the Open Meetings Act does not necessarily apply. Although I think, two people can still meet. The best thing to do is send a BCC email to everyone, and then if people want to continue the conversation, they can do so without there being a problem with the Open Meetings Act.
The good news is, by the time the court case rolls through, you guys will be gone. Just trying to put a little silver lining in your pocket.
If I could just add a little practicality on something. If we are to agree on the guiding principles, and we were looking at one or two of the principles of the integrated care and the evaluation, let me just give you a real concrete thing that's happening. Our drug courts are very research-based programs that encompass everything that we're talking about, and it's collaborated through mental health, substance abuse, the jail system, the courts, and all of them have been able to show the effectiveness of putting people in the drug courts actually saves DOC about $25,000 a year. So the initial investment of $4,000 for treatment versus $25,000 to incarcerate is a no-brainer. However, in the sense of what would the county do in terms of allocating the resources, is what we're looking at is that we already have the proven model and its effectiveness and where it's going. So if we're looking at do we build for $25 million or do we put it in treatment, we already have the answer. So part of the guiding principles out of this thing is that if the county board is looking at our recommendations, that the guiding principles are there and that we have the system of care with the evaluation built in that can show its effectiveness, then it's up to the county to make a decision about you're informed on this service. Where do you want to put your money?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's, the county board has a wide range of issues in front of it, and it's your job really to help keep them focused on, in criminal justice, this is what do you want? And in homelessness, our question was, can we end homelessness? That was our first question, and almost everyone uniformly said no. As much as the federal government would like to say, yes, homelessness can end, and we should have a plan to do that, the reality is human behavior says otherwise. So what can we do to lower homelessness? And I think it's the same question here tonight. There's always going to be crime, and you're always going to have a need for a jail, but do you need to have as many, and that's what you were hinting at, a couple of you, about what was our number from the 1980s, right? We seem to be moving in the wrong direction. If I read somewhere in the report correctly, crime's down, but for some reason we have just as much in the incarceration. So how do you take the existing programs? Here's where you guys have identified the needs. This is where you think the direction should be. We should have some key things should be our goal. Here are some things that we're already doing that are going very well. Here's what they cost. They're evaluated. That's awesome. You know, you have some of those already in the county. Here's things that your experts have brought that are best practices in other places in the country or the state of Illinois. We think we could implement them. We think it would cost X to do that here, whatever the best in 2 months estimate you can come up with. If it's a building, we've had someone talk about, are you building it for 20 years? Are you building it for 100 years? Hey, county board, look at the difference here. If you build it for 100 years, it's going to cost you a Y more, right? You guys have all the right ideas. It's just, right, putting it down on paper so you can sell it. Not shove it down their throat, but give them choices to consider, because I think all they had originally was one proposal, right? Was it really just one recommendation, we need a new jail? And now you're trying to come, I'm sorry? Was that the original kind of? Okay. And so now you are coming as a body of a wide variety of experts saying, let's look at this differently. Let's not put everyone in a facility, but let's give them treatment programs, break up. Is this a crime or a traffic violation? What are the alternatives? Can it be a civil-based penalty instead of a criminal-based penalty? So how do you put that all together? And it sounds like everybody already has the core principles, so that I am not your attorney. I don't want to pretend, now that the attorney's left, we can say that, or one of the attorneys is left. But it sounds like everybody already has your guiding principles. Is that correct? So that doesn't even have to be emailed. Okay, so it's however you guys decide to discuss that. But I like that idea that you may not agree on with everything, but if you agree on the kind of the flow of it, that gives you something to give to the county board and say, this is how we want to weigh things in the future. Any new program we come up with should be measured against this. Is this really achieving what we want to achieve? If you don't even have that, you never know if you're hitting the mark.
So let me ask this question. Maybe I'll ask the county board members. This Patsy Petrie, I believe, sent this LA Times Tuesday, February 5th editorial. Is this from you? I think it was from you, or through you. On one page, it cites some very convincing data about recidivism in Los Angeles, but it's like this, and the Vera Institute, which is a pretty reputable criminal justice evaluation system, One page. So, I mean, will we get, what, can we get the county board members to read this one page and see what it says? I mean, what it says is all this in one page. I mean, this is remarkable to me that this is so well known. The problem's not about, in creating change, the problem is rarely about not having information. The problem is way more often about people's attitudes and willingness to engage in change. So there's a real need for strategies and tactics of how to have the people responsible entertain the possibility of changing. I mean, if you read this one page, you'll just, it's very convincing. Maybe there are things wrong with it that people would like to raise, but this is pretty straightforward.
Has everybody here gotten a copy of that? Okay. There is a quiz before we leave tonight.
Because my prediction is that you could have everybody read this, and it will not change the local attitudes.
It may not change some, but I'd like to think that they created you for a reason.
Well, yeah, there'll be some people who already believe this.
Right. Yes.
I think we should be a little more optimistic than that. We've been coming to these board meetings for a year now. A lot of people from the public, and we've been circulating information like that. People have been coming at public participation and putting inputs based on practices happen around the country. And I think there's been a fundamental shift in the thinking of the board on this, on the issue of the jail and on criminal justice. It hasn't been consolidated yet. It's not finalized yet. But there's a big, big difference in the way people are looking at this question on the county board. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And part of it is a result of public participation. Part of it is a result of our work. Part of it is a result of ILPP. And part of it is the result of some of the internal dynamics on the board. I think people on the board itself have taken up this issue. And, I mean, you know, Patsy's been at every meeting of the task force. I mean, she circulates information, and other people have also been active. So, I mean, I think we have reason to suspect that people can and will listen to these things. They may not listen to them when we say them once. They may not even listen to them when we say them twice. But if we say them three times or four times, I think there's potential for this to get through. I think we have evidence of that for what's happened in the last year. And so
I think you hit the nail on the head, too. It's all parts of the stool. It's your work. It's the public participation. It's the interest that the board is sitting here listening to you. It takes all those pieces. And if you're not optimistic, you wouldn't be here tonight. Right.
Well, I just want you to be clear that I don't think it's impossible at all. And I agree with what you just said. All I'm saying is, we do not have to reinvent everything that's well known to anybody who actually wants to pay attention to these issues that exist in many communities in addition to ours. It's not necessary for us to reinvent what's already known. What we have to do is
part of the challenge, I think, is that we have a state's attorney who will look you in the eye and tell you with great conviction and passion that we're already doing all this stuff. I mean, she's done that with us repeatedly. Oh, we're already doing restorative justice. So that's a hurdle we need to get over. We need to figure out how to deal with that, because by most any common definition of restorative justice, we fall so far short of that in practice. And yet she'll look you in the eye and she'll tell you that's what we do.
I wasn't at the meeting where you invited. That was before I was on the committee. But we do actually do restorative justice for youth in this community, not for adults. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's what she was referring to, but I don't know of the program.
She was speaking to us, and I think she knew who she was speaking to, and I think she.
I think the thing that's clear to me, and I don't doubt that there are places in the system where people who are doing, or specific small ways in which a restorative justice is thought to be the philosophy. I'm not even debating that it is or isn't. All I'm saying is that is not the philosophy of this criminal justice system as a system. Not that you can't find places for, there's all kinds of places you could find things happening. Well, you know, with respect to drug courts, for example, how many people are actually in jail for drug offenses who have nothing to do and can't get near the drug court? How many people are served? And how many, you know, so there's all kinds of little ways. What we're talking about here is the need to change the system. And so that principle of restorative justice, for example, if that's what we agree on, it would make a huge difference if that were the philosophy of the criminal justice system. If all the major actors in it actually wanted to adopt it, they would think about things differently than they now think about them. Not that I'm not disputing what you said. All I'm saying is it only occurs in small pockets. Same thing is true with pre-trial services, where we've heard all kinds of assertions, including Scott's feeling that the, you know, things move pretty quickly here. And I don't doubt that there are individual cases. It's just not systematic. It's just not formalized. It's not a part of the ongoing way that they do it, except by the, it depends on the goodwill of how the people doing it feel that day.
Yes.
I think maybe when I've reflected on the, you know, some of the changes that have taken place in the county board, I think Julian is right to say that, I mean, the key players in this at the end of the day are going to be are the state's attorney, the sheriff, and the chief judge, right? And so we've had the state's attorney here and the sheriff here quite a while back. And maybe it's time that we think about how we reengage these people again. We're almost a year down the down the line of a process. See how they're responding to what we're saying a year down the process, a year down the line, to see what opportunity there is for headway. Because even if the county board votes to do ABC, if those main, you know, players in the criminal justice system are not on board with this, it's going to be very hard to get anything to actually, you know, happen. So, I mean, maybe we need to find a way that we might check out again how, you know, what they're thinking about this and see if there has been any movement on their side. I mean, I don't know because I haven't, I mean, I don't hang out with them. But, I mean, nonetheless, I think it's something we need to think about maybe a couple months down the road when we get our things a little more refined. You know, let's test the waters with them.
I do think that's makes perfect sense. I mean, it's a tactic. It's a strategy for moving things along. I just would like to comment also that I'm pretty convinced now, and I could say it about the Urbana police system for sure, and possibly the county police. In Champaign, I have less of a feeling for, but no feeling. The policemen on the street, when we're talking about these mental health issues and these jailing issues, these people care about this and they don't like the way it's working. And they want help. They want an alternative. So that's along with what Jim was just saying, I think we could maybe think a bit about mobilizing or making working with some of the law enforcement people in this community for whom this is a problem of their everyday job, and it's hard for them. They would love help. I mean, I have lots of reasons to think that from what I've heard from them. So I guess I'm being optimistic. Well, there's allies out there, right?
Yep.
That care about it. You know, they might care, you know, there might be a bit of a different, I mean, these people, their job is in law enforcement, so they're not going to be talk about it in ways that are necessarily that same fuzzy, warm way that people in social work or psychiatry talk about it. But they have some of the same issues and goals because they don't like the way it's working. It makes their job harder, not easier, to do it the way it's being done.
Well, a real concrete way to do coalition building, but once again, we're encumbered by the sense we have to move so fast. But Tom Eberle was telling me there is a national grant we could apply for, and if we got it, it provides $150,000 for reentry planning, and that could be reentry both for prisoners and those in jail. And obviously, it would help achieve all the goals that we've been charged with. And then that plan might yield another $1 million in grants. To get a grant like that, you have to have everybody pulled together. You have to have the prosecution, et cetera, et cetera. But also, the problem with that is to get that done, again, they always issue these grant proposals, and you have about a month to get it done. Somebody would have to drop everything, right? I actually think we could get this because, quite frankly, because the problems are so egregious in this county, and because if we pull together, the potential is so great. But to get it done, everybody would basically have to stop doing some of these other things. But I just wanted to mention that. I thought that that was intriguing. Another point, Jim or James, you'd mentioned this cap. I would think it'd be very helpful if there was a one-page summary for us to see if we did institute a cap, what does that mean in terms of jail numbers? Maybe you have that, but if we had that cap right now, what you were talking about cap on incarceration rate, right? Not incarceration numbers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that figure that I pulled out is just, it's just kind of an historical figure to say that it was so, in 1980, the U.S. incarceration rate was, I think, about 146 per 100,000, and now it's 716. So you're basically talking about an 80% reduction.
Yeah.
Take us back to that.
The reason I just raised it, I've seen several articles that are just so powerful dealing with caps at the state level. And, again, it's research-based. James Austin's written some, again, they're just stunningly compelling. And he sets forth then how to, and it's the cap about the same time period you mentioned, and how that cap could be realized, save boatloads of money, and reduce recidivism. This is at state level. But the same notion of a cap could be imported into this county. The real question would be why does it have to be higher? And so we have the research at the state level. I don't know what the numbers look like here, I'm sure, but the same premises would apply. So I thought that was a thought-provoking idea you tendered. Yeah.
Yes. Are you finished?
Yeah.
Okay. Just a couple of pieces of information for you all to put into your decision-making process. The county board does have access to consultant time for grant writing and grant seeking from an entity within the House of RPC. So there is an avenue of help that you can, Astrid knows about this, and she can maybe give some entry points for that. Another, as I'm listening to all of the conversation, I put some numbers up on my political website, and without the numbers from Muhammad and the University Police Department, annually we've spent about $64 million on criminal justice. That's a good chunk of change, and within that are some of these various programs that you all have been talking about. A subset of that, if we, start making cells, a subset of that, some we have statistics on, as you mentioned, drug court. Some we don't, because I started going out myself when all this started, talking to various people who direct programs, and they don't have data. They don't have data on what the large end could potentially be. And then the small end that they're working with, they really don't have outcome data on that. So that makes it difficult. So one of the things that, since we can't wrap our heads around data right at the moment, is to start creating a Venn diagram of where these overlaps do exist. And numbers, if and when they come along, we can start plugging those in so we can see where some of those overlaps of costs might potentially be. This becomes a real visual for people to start seeing that if, in fact, there's some coalescing from your thought process, that it doesn't mean that $64 million might be less, but it might be spread more efficiently around and for more programs, expanding programs that already exist, you know, whatever comes up. But these are some things as I'm listening to your conversation this evening that have come to mind. And now that you mentioned a grant, there might be something available for some help on the time of writing.
Training for the police in how to deal with people with mental illness. And last year on Valentine's Day, everybody had been trained out of prison. So, I mean, we would be happy to help with something like that to advocate.
You guys look wiped out.
Can I ask Patsy a question?
Mm-hmm.
About, I don't know enough about how the county functions, or you guys probably know as well, I guess, whoever. Does the county have people who are responsible within the county for research, I'm not going to call it research necessarily, for evaluating what they're doing, the various programs that the county runs? Are there people that have, you know, this sort of skill or the county uses to help them monitor their own activities in some way? Is there such a, I don't know what to call it. Is there an office of evaluation within the county?
It's called the citizens, right? That's who ultimately decides. State's attorney. And so they're encouraged by the county board, and particularly in the way we develop budgets, to do, you know, long-term planning, performance measurement, strategies, strategic plans and goals and objectives. And you know, they're encouraged to do all that, which would require, you know, evaluation to determine whether or not you've achieved those goals. But I would say, for the most part, we don't have extra staff anywhere in the county, and everyone is so busy doing what it is they have to do in terms of prosecuting cases in the state's attorney's office, and, you know, that no, there is not a high component of that type of evaluation going on. I was going to add from a comment earlier when you talked about kind of coalition building or inviting people back. Now that it's been a year, it's important to talk to the state's attorney and probation and the sheriff and say, this is what we've been thinking and working on for the past year. You definitely want to do that, I think, before you make your recommendation, because if you don't have any, you don't want to put forth this formal proposal and then find out that it's not going to mesh with anybody. And the other challenge is that you're making a recommendation to the county board, but everyone else that you've mentioned is an elected official separate, right? So in the city, for example, the mayor or the city manager has that hiring discretion. But here, the sheriff, the state's attorney, they're all elected. And so there's that difference. That's what makes this so much harder and more difficult, if you will. So I would recommend what you were talking about, that you want to invite them back in somehow, some way, even if it's just that you share the proposal with them in writing before you send it up, so to speak, and offer them the opportunity to provide feedback even to the chair directly. There's different ways you can do that. I know timing is really an issue for you. But if you can at least, you don't want to leave out some of those key stakeholders. And you've talked about the public participation. Think about how you might, going forward, have a special meeting, a special advertising. I know you've had a lot of public participation in the past. This was nice tonight because we were able to get a lot done, I think. But do you want to open it back up and even invite people that have come and signed in the past and make sure they're aware that you're about, you know, you're getting ready to make your proposal? Because all of that will feed into the county board and lets them know all the homework you've done in advance before you submitted your proposal. If your proposal feels like it's over here and doesn't take any of those things into consideration, you're already fighting an uphill battle. And like you said, they may not hear you the first time, They may not quite believe it the second time, but by the third or fourth time. Well, if you've already presented this proposal to all those people, they're going to carry that message forward for you. So it won't just be this group. It'll be the other people that, and maybe they don't buy into all X, Y, and Z, but a few people might like X, a few different people might like Y. They start talking to the county board. It really does have an impact. So what to do going forward? There's a lot of typing. I don't know how you're, and Darlene and I didn't really talk about how we might summarize this. The executive committee of the homeless continuum actually worked to put together that one-page sheet that you saw in front of you, which was just a summary, and the work isn't even finished yet. I don't know how you would like to wrap this up. Obviously, do you have any thoughts, Darlene, or? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you guys have your next meeting set? What time?
Are you coming to the one on the 20th?
5:30. I don't think so.
I'm going to meet with him on the 20th. With the mental health board.
Oh, well, I'll be at the mental health board. That's why I thought you were asking me at a different meeting. I have to be at the mental health board.
On a Friday?
I was
going to say one, but then I know who you work for. It is a Friday.
We like that building. Customers.
There you go.
Right. I think we should discuss that grant. If we have a chance of getting it, we ought to do whatever it is we need to do.
As a thought, and I don't know if this is the same grant, but I'm thinking that it is. The grant is called Second Chance, and I think the deadline is either March 1st or March 15th. March 21st.
It also requires the involvement of the judiciary, as I understand it.
It does.
The presiding judge has flatly said he will not apply for this grant.
Yeah.
Because of the requirements within the grant that he is not willing to apply for.
Which are?
Further sentencing later on, related to outcome. Right. Couldn't get Judge Ford, could we? We have a good relationship with Judge Ford, too.
Feel free to talk to
him. You're talking about defiance, right?
Yeah. I heard Vern, and I don't know if it's the same one. And I've got somewhere in my notes the date he said it was March, but I don't think it was March 1st or 5th. I thought he said March 4th, so I have no idea the different one.
He said that.
Okay. So you'd think it's the same one. It's reentry. I know Second Chance is reentry, and he had said reentry. Right. Right. Right.
Just enough money to fund James' proposal.
Well, it's the planning. I mean, you've got, yeah. Well, I think we actually, if there truly was, I don't know, James, how far you think, I haven't had a chance to look at your work product. And let's assume we had everybody else who was a buy-in, the sheriff, et cetera. If the judge is the impediment, I would favor working with him, but otherwise it would be, I guess, important to have that on record that he won't facilitate a reentry effort that could potentially yield $1 million to the county. So I wouldn't put it in antagonistic terms. I think we'd want to work with them. But, again, I think the challenge is the time frame.
Enough
right? Right, right, right. Yeah.
I mean, the problem with that proposal is it's one of those proposals that requires pulling together a number of partners and and then you have to have a 501c, so you have to figure out what that entity is. I mean, it's a lot of organizing.
Right.
Right. That's, you know, just doing the same thing.
Mammy can't talk to Faunus and the head of the mental health court.
If it occurs every year, I mean, it's a perfect example of an opportunity to bring all of these entities together to potentially be poised and ready to apply for it next year. I'm not saying. They have this grant in McLean County, and I think it's working fairly well. So there's a neighboring county that has a similar program.
And if we could get a smaller pilot project running or something between now and then,
well, it's the kind of thing that we could be recommending that we move toward as a part of our current report.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we can implement in 2 weeks, but given, as I understand it, that it's annual, but we should be recommending things that are practicable in the short future, not just in the visionary future. So actually, I think it's a darn good recommending, because it's very practical.
Let's plant seeds about one more thing. But this, again, unfortunately, our two people who are looking at financing are not here, Carol and Michael. But I was thinking, I was at this roundtable on incarceration at University of Michigan last week, and they were talking about the correctional free lunch, which is there is this incentive to send people to prison, incentive for local judges to, because they're aware there aren't the sanctioning alternatives in the community. They're aware of the fiscal burden, so let's send them off to prison. It's all in the state's tab. So it's a real issue, and, of course, we know the state system can't afford the number of prisoners it has. So I was thinking about potentially trying to see. And I know the state is bankrupt, but we could be a pilot project as a county to set up the structure. We'd have to think creatively that would take that would help us create the programs we need, but also be an example that could then be replicated throughout the county. So it's just something to start thinking about to address this issue, because I'm noticing from the sentences being imposed, it's pretty obvious that the judges don't want these people to go to prison. They're sending them to prison with a recommendation they get boot camp. But the reality is those people come back to our community and nothing really meaningful has happened, because the data on boot camps is very discouraging. So, okay.
That would be another example of programs that are lauded without evaluation data that supports them. Mm-hmm. But they sound good.
Right.
Which is a waste of resources.
Thank you. I get it now. It is important to think these through, because it's not just that this is right and that's wrong. If you move away from accounting your own population, that has impact on who? In a bad way, who's that impact? Correctional officers.
Yeah.
That's a whole population that we haven't even talked about. But there's a perception in this county, in every county in America, that you're, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong, it's just there's implications that have to be thought through. Even if it's not your group that thinks through it, somebody else is going to be weighing that decision. And so that's why you're going to present the best case that you can to sell them your idea. But understand that they have to make decisions that have implications beyond just what we present. Nice job. You guys are a great group.
Before we depart, can we pick another meeting other than that? The meeting on the 23rd, as I understand it, is to talk to the consultant. The 22nd is to talk to the consultant. We're probably not going to exactly continue our own discussion, so maybe we could pick a time for the next meeting. Because I don't know if I can make that meeting on the 22nd or not, but I'd like to know when the next one is. Which would what's date were you suggesting? The what?
There's a county board study session that night.
We're talking about Mondays, right?
How about the 28th?
The 4th? March 4th? I think that's 2 weeks, right? Well, it's more than. Which day are we talking about? March 4th at 6 o'clock.
You're saving me. I don't have to watch Monty Python with my husband.
Maybe he'll tape it for you.
I have a comment on that. I really feel at this point a lot of the work is that, like, Scott and I met on Friday. We got a lot of work to do, he and I. So the more time you can give, at least us, to give you something concrete, the better. That'd be my question. Will everybody pretty much have a preliminary report in that time, or no, in their areas? Because James got something. Right. We could finalize.
We're talking now here about concrete proposals, right? So, like, Jim has one that he
developed. So we could talk about James.
You know, the one that I suggested last time, I didn't spell out in great detail, but I could expand on it.
Yeah, we could give you the comment on your part.
Any statistics that we can get on anything so we have a better idea of what things cost, what will work, how big they are now.
Are you talking about local statistics or statistics in the...
Local.
Because there's lots of statistics,
yes,
but they're not necessarily local.
I think the sheriff has a lot of them, and we'll give them.
Well, yeah, we have some of his.
Okay. I mean, just thinking a little bit about the mental health issue. We have quite an active interest from people in NAMI. I mean, they've agreed to send Ann as a representative to these meetings, and we've been talking in other fora also. But and I mean, there's people in the task force that are interested in working on that. I mean, we've had people from the Mental Health Board and Community Elements here, you know, previously, and it seems that, like, that along with perhaps the two of you and that group, you know, might form some kind of a structure that could kind of brainstorm a little more around that issue. And I mean, I don't know if that would be helpful, but it seems like there's quite a bit of interest in that, both from, you know, people that are working at the jail, but from people in the community who are in those issues. I don't know if there's a way to add any of that synergy into our discussions and your process between now and then. I'm just
well, yeah, I'm not sure what the steps are. I think you were at least one of those meetings with the police.
there are meetings going on in which the Urbana police have called the meetings, but in attendance have been county police, university police, and Champaign police, and people from community elements. And there's a lot of agreement. And I'm speaking now about the problem that the police officers on the street have when they have somebody, the exact thing I was describing last time we met, and they don't know what to do with them, and they end up putting them in jail even though they don't want to. So it hasn't reached the point of where you have the official statements of the various police forces, but the officers who are participating in this are behind it, and it was stimulated actually by the Urbana police chief, who asked his officers to start talking about this, because it's a serious problem for all the law enforcement people. So that could be, I think, you know, they may have some slightly different ideas about exactly what to do and how to do it, but there's a lot of similarity of desire to do something different.
We should talk to community elements, because community elements, yeah. Crisis team is the one who evaluates them when they take them into the emergency room, and then they call one of their doctors, and their doctor says yes or no.
So, I mean, I can go into detail about the problems that creates. But
what I'm trying to talk about here is, how do we get that energy into, you know, developing some kind of a proposal or a guideline or a suggestion to the county board? I mean, because there's a lot of, I mean, do we want to invite, say, I mean, like previously, we had a contingent from the African-American community who came here and talked specifically about the issues of racial disparity, and I think it kind of informed us a lot about that issue. Do we want to have some of these police, some people from community elements, some people from NAMI come here and give us a little bit of an input on that as a way of kind of kicking us further down the road of developing a proposal on that? I'm just trying to think of what the process to get a proposal on that, because it's obviously a really key area.
If that's just a tactic or a strategy that we want to engage in, I'm actually going to a meeting with those police representatives. And you might be there this Wednesday morning. And I could ask them if they'd be willing to come or send someone to this task force to talk to us from their point of view about how they experience this dilemma.
I thought that because of time constraints, and maybe I'm wrong on this, maybe I'm just, that we had agreed to take certain of the potential recommendations and get some meat to the bones. So Scott, that's why Scott and I met. We were going to do develop some recommendations, more detailed recommendations for you. And I thought you and Bruce were going to give meat to the bones, giving as an example what you tendered to the group as an example last time, plus the ideas that Mark and et cetera had put together, and then putting those in under potential recommendation number 4, but also talking about cost effectiveness, mentioning, you know, in a pithy way how cost effective this is, and then what this, you know, again. So I'm quite frankly, I would like to hear from the police, but I'm not sure that that's the best use of our limited time right now.
Well, what I think James is after here is to communicate to the recipients of our report that we're not alone in this, that we have, that there are other, including the local. I think it makes some sense to ask local police. It's not a problem to do what you're suggesting. There may be some point at which we actually want to invite the police to look at what we're suggesting and see how it meets what they think their needs are, and if they like it, to ask them to come and testify before the county board about our report.
Yeah. No,
I mean, that would be a strategy that we could take.
We could ask them to come and talk to us for 15 minutes at the next meeting, just explain the problem. Yeah.
Just as a note of information, to let you all know that on the juvenile justice side, the Regional Planning Commission has been working with all of the police jurisdictions in the county for several years to do diversion options for the station-adjusted kids. So that's the kids that are minor offenses or first-time offenders, not the kids that are at the JDC.
But that was exactly why that came about, is because the police didn't know what to do with kids. If they weren't putting them in the JDC, they didn't know what to do. It was like, well, what do we do with them now? And so the law came out in, I believe, about 10 years ago that allowed the police to do station adjustments. So they started trying it in the county, but then they had to follow up with the kids and see if they were doing things, and that didn't work very well. So we now have a partnership with the Regional Planning Commission where our staff are doing the tracking of the kids in the various kinds of diversion activities and seeing whether they're participating or not. The program is not foolproof. There are still kids that recidivate, and there are still kids that don't participate or engage at all. But we have kept statistics, and a rolling average will show that of the kids that do participate, there's an 18% better recidivism rate than the kids that don't. Same crimes, across the same crimes. And so I think this year the police departments are talking about wanting to, and the state's attorney's also at the table, trying to talk about whether they want to do something called the Juvenile Assessment Center. And it would be a place where we could increase the intake for not only kids that are being station adjusted for minor crimes, but it would be a way that we could also help the police with kids that are status offenders, which currently they're kind of just warning and releasing right now. And again, they don't know what to do with them. And so there will be a proposal, maybe more than one, that's being presented, I believe, to the Mental Health Board or to the Access Initiative folks this year, which have some funding available for different things like that. The police are all on board with it as far as trying to do that, because it will help them, again, figure out what happens with kids that might have family issues, that are runaways, or that are staying out after hours, or have child abuse issues, or different kinds of things that are showing up in status offenses. And so those proposals are coming to the table. This process has taken about 10 years to develop. It's not been overnight. It's not been just, oh, the police decided they want to do this, so we're going to do it. There's been a lot of negotiation between the various police departments, between the state's attorney and the police, between regional planning and the police. All the different jurisdictions do it slightly differently in terms of referrals and that sort of thing. But it is working, and it is making, I think, a difference for the kids. And I think the police support it. And I would be quite surprised if the police that are handling the adult cases wouldn't see that it's been working and say, wow, we would like to have something similar for adults. So that's similar to what you're talking about, that they just, if they come into a situation where it's not a criminal activity, but it definitely is somebody that's creating a disturbance or a mental health issue or whatever, they have to deal with it. And then it's like, well, now they're stuck with it. They don't know what else to do. So I would be surprised if they wouldn't be in support of some other alternatives that could help them out in that way.
I would also add, you might talk to the fire departments too, because they run on calls. Well, they're running the same people that have the same issues, and they want to take them people somewhere other than just drop them somewhere. So they need help, they need support. So
the fire department gets
some. So, I mean, just to get clarity on our next meeting, I mean, what reports are we going to be looking at? I mean, we're going to have, what are we actually, what's concretely going to be on the table here? I mean, I've got this draft. It needs a lot of work. I'm looking forward to getting some feedback on it. But what else are we going to be looking at, or what's do we?
Well, that little thing, that half a page thing I wrote last time is an idea. I don't really see much advantage, frankly, in turning it into a grant proposal. I can make it longer and more detailed about how it might work, or I could put in some information about how many cases there are of a problem like this, because the police, at least some of the police departments, have them. But I don't see much advantage us in developing long, detailed proposals for specific programs. I just don't think that's
my sense
good
is
use
what,
of our.
My sense is what we need is a three-page argument that has an appendices to it. Because when I looked out across the board when we were there in November, I thought to myself, These folks are not going to read 27 pages. No. What we need is a clear, powerful, concise, Lincoln-esque three pages that says the system as it's working has got real serious problems. There are solutions that abound throughout this country. We've surveyed these solutions, and we've come up with a proposal here that looks to be conservative, cost-effective, and that puts the resources of the county in the service of the people. Mm-hmm. And then just lay it out, and then in the appendices we can add in these details. But I think it needs to be compelling and short and to the
point. In the appendices, you've got to have
the budget,
the costs, and a pretty tight program. I mean, you're trying to beat a set of blueprints and a bunch of pretty pictures of these buildings and so
That's
on.
That's right.
And we've got to say, you know, this is a clear alternative for this 150,000.
Yeah, that's right.
This is a clear alternative for that 150,000, because they're going to want a fair lot.
Well, in that regard, we have spent some time, but not much, contemplating. If it's reduced down to what you're just saying, we do have. Then that would cause us to need to offer some sort of solution to the problem of the current way that people are housed. It's not just a numbers problem. So we'd have to be tying into this little thing the notion, for example, that we could completely eliminate the use of the downtown jail, except for other, unless it's used for some alternative, some people mentioned at one point, day reporting or something like that.
Library book storage.
So we'd reduce enough. We'd have to demonstrate, I think, in the sense of what you're suggesting. I don't know if we can demonstrate it. That the numbers of people, of men, housed in the other, whatever you refer to it as, the
satellite.
The satellite, the current satellite jail, would be small enough so that it could be a pod available for women who need to be in jail, of whom there aren't very many if you start thinking about nonviolent and violent. And if you have so I guess what I'm saying is, if I'm following what your thought was there, that we're somehow competing with a pretty picture of a building, we need to address somewhere here how they'll handle the housing of people and how this will help that.
Jane?
I think if there's one thing that we can count on ILPP to do, is to present construction options. You know, I mean, I think they're going to give a whole range of possibilities as to how people, who could be housed where, I mean, whether they, I think once we have that report, we may be able to respond to that. But I think the point that Astrid's making is important, that we need to, and I think Bill as well, so I'm going to taking that, I can restructure this to make the finances and stuff the appendix, because I agree it's too long as it stands, but I'll expect the people of the task force to be able to handle it, but not the board. But the point is that I think we do need these pithy proposals to show examples of what these alternative programs will look like and how much they will cost. Otherwise, I don't think the board is going to listen. They're not going to listen to ideas. They've heard all the ideas. They've heard all the stuff about mental health, about reentry, about substance abuse. They've heard it. They all know that these are options. But what they haven't heard and they haven't seen is concrete proposals that make these things look doable, feasible, other than good ideas.
I think it has to start with pretrial services.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, maybe the board members that are here, we have four of you. I mean, maybe you could respond to that in terms of what do you think is the most effective thing to actually put forward to people.
Examples of what we can enact, how much it will cost, what are the benefits of it, things that we can get votes on. And it's got to be something we can vote on, ultimately.
The one recommendation I would make is that, again, the reality is that what's in the appendix is still your report about how do we effectively implement, at this point, recommendation number 7. And then I think we should write that, and then it will not be hard to make a punchy executive summary that meets your needs. But we need both, because otherwise it looks like we're just making up stuff. And everything we need to tender to you needs to be – one of our main points is we are – the practices in the county are not driven by research. They don't work, and so on and so forth. So I think – I'd say stay the course and add the details you think aren't in there. With our understanding, it'll probably be an appendix, but then we'll extrapolate that for the key points that make them understand the soundness of the recommendations being tendered to them.
Just so structurally, we're kind of saying that if we have, I mean, I don't know what we say, if we have 7 recommendations, then we're going to, when we present this report, we're going to have proposals attached to various of those recommendations, maybe not all of them, and that way, and that also provides a structure that would be easy for the board to, you know, to connect into.
Well, I think people are beginning to vote with their feet.
Okay.
Do you have a motion to adjourn? All in favor? Discussion?